You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome back to The Block Party, an Insecure podcast where we dive into the untold stories of Insecure. I'm Issa Rae.
And I'm Prentice Penny. And this episode is brought to you today by Gatorade Lower Sugar. And we're going to be diving into episode 2 of season 1, Messy AF.
Messy AF. And it is a little messy.
Oh, it's definitely.
I got to say.
Messy. Now, before we dive into this episode, how do you like our new set since we're like now a podcast.
Yeah, we're a podcast. We were shooting a pilot last time. We didn't know if it was going to get picked up.
Like the real show.
And now we got our own space. We're decorating, you know. I feel good.
Yeah, we got tambourine.
We got tambourine. Special tambourine. It lights up. Did you know that?
I did remember you stole it.
I stole this tambourine. Karaoke spot. They'll never get it back. But yeah, this is nice. It feels like home. I'm happy to be doing this with you.
Shout out
to everyone who supported the first episode.
Absolutely.
It's so exciting to be out there. Sorry we didn't give you a new season or a movie. Some of y'all expected the most. Your expectations were too high. It's just us. But hopefully you like the rest.
And this is going to be longer than a half hour. So you should be happy with
promised
what we're doing. So I do have to ask, once the show premiered finally, because it was a lot of work to get there, what was your reaction to other people's reaction watching the show?
I was excited, but it felt like almost anticlimactic because it was like it appeared online, it premiered online in that window, and then it appeared for the world. And I remember we had a party where we were following along with the tweets, and it felt like people were rooting for the show, but it wasn't that many people watching. And I will say, you know, you want your show to do well.
Yeah.
Once you're picked up, you're airing.
Where are we going with this?
Whatever. They sent out ratings on that Tuesday.
Yeah.
And when I saw how many people tuned in, I was like, oh, we could. We got canceled. That's crazy. We're not about to finish. And then Casey Blaze responded like, these numbers are great.
Yeah.
Let's keep on growing. And I was like, woo, this is okay. We have a chance. Because the numbers weren't amazing.
Yeah.
People were still finding the show. We had to prove ourselves.
Yeah, we did. I think I had a slightly different reaction to how it was going to play, because it was funny because the whole way we were filming, we were just like, can we just get to Essence Fest? All we want to do is party. And we watched, it was the first time watching it with a crowd of people.
Yeah.
And watching their reaction to it kind of gave me some hope that, like, oh, okay, this is actually gonna be, people were laughing when they should have been laughing, people were like tripping when they should have been tripping. And so I actually felt when it aired, like, if it's weird to say more confident, but I definitely felt like, oh, I've watched it with an audience.
Yeah,
so I kind of know.
Times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I felt like Black people are probably going to fuck with this. How they fuck with it, I didn't know. But I felt off the Essence Fest that this is going to be something that's going to be like kind of connect to people for sure.
Well, that's what made me scared about this episode. Because even in rewatching, I was like, this episode was slow to me. It felt so much more quiet. And it felt like a show finding its footing.
Yeah.
And that, I remember when this premiered, I remember thinking like, can people just make it to episode 3? And then once they make it to episode 3,
why were you tripping about them making sure they get to episode 3?
Because you might lose people, the drop off. Like,
that's
there's
true.
A show that I'm watching right now where I'm like, oh, I'm not coming back. I'm good. I'll see what the commentary is. But I fell off around episode 5 where I was like, I'm good. I don't care what happens. And so I was worried about that with our show where it's like, you know, people get bored easily. So I had these milestones of where I felt like people would be hooked.
Yeah.
And two was not one of those milestones. I was just like, you know, we had good moments, no lie. But to me, when I knew the show's potential, I just wanted to.
And we knew stuff that was coming that the audience didn't know, right? So do a second episode of a show, right? The one thing that you have to actually do for the audience, which I've learned a long time ago, is you kind of have to say the show again, right? So you're kind of in this weird space where you're trying to like, hey, maybe somebody just started really watching episode 2 before 1, right?
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to reintroduce the show again to everybody. So it does kind of take a second of like, there are elements that are similar to the pilot, but you're definitely trying to like redo the show again for the audience.
I'm so glad you said that. And that's what it felt like. And it, again, it felt like I was excited to get out of the rules of TV.
Yeah.
And from three onward, it felt like we were able to do that. Yeah. Whereas two, it felt like, okay, we're treading the same-ish territory, but, you know, we're obviously expanding the world and we're making you fall in love with these characters. We're offering alternative perspectives, specifically for the Lawrence character. So, like, I get it, but it's not, candidly, it's not my favorite episode.
It does feel the most sitcom-y.
And we had those pops that
and
were
we'll get into why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, like, but we had lost a voiceover.
Yeah.
Right. So we were kind of figuring out the show. It was the first time we had written the show with other people now. Yeah. Right. So that was also you. How were you feeling about handing? Because obviously, like, when you wrote the pilot, you were sort of there and it was you and Larry and you, obviously, by the way. What did it feel like? I'm curious from the perspective of this is the first episode that's like writing it with a collective group of people.
I'm so glad you asked that. Because I tell this story all the time. Like, I obviously, like you said, wrote the pilot, and then this is the introduction of the writer's room. And process wise, we would typically, you know, outline the show together beat by beat, then outline it, and then the writer would go off and write it. And so this was the second episode was mine. You thought that was best, like just be able to carry the show. And so I remember writing it and then showing up to the writer's room the next day, being like, okay, I don't really know what this process is, but I'm hyped. And you were like, okay, let's get into rewriting. Let's put the script up on the screen. And I was like, what?
What do you think was going to happen? Like,
I didn't know.
Okay,
and so it was basically like, we're going to dissect this script in front of everybody. And we're going to punch it up. We're going to say what didn't work. And I was like, in front of everybody just right now while I'm sitting here? And it was...
In my face?
So even then, putting it up, and I could feel it in the room, like... When you were asking, okay, page one, what do we want? What do we like? What do we not like? Let's go through it. Let's just go through it line by line. And people were kind of hesitant. And then Amy Big Chass was the first one to be like, well, actually, yeah, I think we can put there. This goes a little long, but it gave the freedom to everybody else to like pick it apart. And, you know, I just had to sit there silently, like, yeah, I didn't really like that joke. Yeah. I didn't work hard on it.
I'll put that in there just playing.
Yeah, I was testing y'all. Yeah. So if you fucked with it, that was a test. And you lost, you failed. So it was just like this process that I think, one, was brilliant because it allowed everyone in the room to feel comfortable critiquing the girl whose show it was. Yeah. And also made it clear, like, everybody could get it.
Yeah.
Could get it. And I literally watched in real time the script get better. Where, like, when people would pitch alternative jokes or, you know, the trims. And I learned so much about myself as a writer. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you didn't mean it to be a humiliation ritual. That was, like, you know, the world that you came from. But it was, like, me learning the process for the first time. And I think it's so helpful for any new writer to go through that.
I think it's also helpful. One, I should have said, hey, girl, this is the process. I probably should have said that. I didn't even think about it. I was just, there's a million other things I was stressed about.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
I do think it also taught me, I know early on in my days where just being less precious, right, in certain ways. And I remember in my early days of writing, I would take like 7 months to like meticulously get something. And it's like, no, the craft is to get faster and identify the problems quicker, right? And I think that was sort of the point of that, was to be like, okay, let's just put it up there. Everybody's vulnerable and, you know, but I do remember you acted great because you did not seem like that was like an issue in any way.
Yeah, I held it in. But I think that was also part of it in realizing, like, I'm learning, take this in, don't take any of this personally, and all these people are here to make your show better. So it was, like, it was humbling, genuinely.
Yeah. So what do you remember, I'm curious, the most about filming this episode? Because this is the first one we filmed after the pilot. It had been like 7-8 months since we had filmed anything.
Yeah, I remember the very first scene that we shot was Molly and Issa in the Line Hotel on that rooftop, which was initially, I want to say, Roy Choi's.
It was Roy Choi's, yeah.
Yeah, we love Roy Choi. Shout out to Roy Choi. Yeah, we almost cast him. But yeah, now it's, I think... it's a commissary now, whatever it was, but we wanted to like highlight his space. And that was the first scene between me and Molly. And I remember that also trying to find our footing there. I'm like, this is the first scene. I feel like we're getting it.
Yeah.
I don't feel, and even rewatching it, I was like, oh, turn this off, fast forward. Cause you feel it. But it was just kind of getting back into the groove of things and starting with like the foundational friendship, but it was hard to get into. And then of course I remember some of the funny things. Like I was on set every day, obviously, and rewatching, like, obviously Lawrence meeting Thug Yoda for the first time.
Yeah.
And various nail salon reshoots and the like. So there's a couple things that I remember. What about you?
I remember being super anxious. When we were filming the pilot, it was really like kind of like a rogue group of people. Like, it was me, you, Melina. It was just kind of like we were over here, right? Mm-hmm. Even though we know we had a crew, but there's no writer's room. There's not a lot of, there's stakes, certainly, but it doesn't feel like, it feels like you're just doing something and who the hell knows, right? Yeah. And this was the first time where it was like, oh, shit, this is like a new director. It was being in front of everybody for the first time. I just remember like Video Village being so big and all the writers and producers there. And I remember being like, I felt like, okay, now every step you're like we'd always say, like, we can't slip, not once, right? And so every step is like delivering a thing, right? So it's like shooting the pilot is a step. Like getting the room up and going is a step, right? And now filming the series becomes a step. And I just remember at every step, you're just like, this is new and feeling more anxious. So I remember that first day, and it wasn't kind of clicking like the way the original like Mercado scene felt between you guys. And I was like, oh, fuck. This is not going to go. And then we eventually found it. But I remember that first day, that first morning, seeing the whole crew for the first time. And it was a different crew.
It was a new crew,
So I just remember feeling like, this is for real, for real.
Yeah. This was so much me and Molly.
Yeah.
You know, we were pretty much together the entire day. So to your point, like, that was such the... That was the glue of the show, and it mattered a lot. But then being able to build Lawrence out, like, we were watching it.
Yeah.
I always, one of our execs used to always feel so bad for Lawrence. And I'd be like, why you feel bad for him, girl? Get off. But rewatching, I was like, oh, man, he's just so lonely.
He is very
lonely. He doesn't have anybody to talk to. We got the introduction of Chad, one of my favorite characters of all time. Would love to write for Chad. Like, and Neil kills the delivery every single time. And so that was, he was also... the example of, you know, how men, I think, which is really prescient for maybe a future project, but like men, some of the men don't have these like solid friendships where they can confide in them.
Yeah, I remember even to the page of reading Chad for the first time, I couldn't stop laughing. Because I was like, I just know so many niggas that speak in non sequiturs. And him, like, when he just switched to Showtime Girly House, I think it's cool. He cool.
I think it's swole.
Like, I was like, this, that just told me everything about this. So when you wrote that character, I was like, this is brilliant. This guy is amazing. And all I want to do is watch him talk. So it's not just Chad. We got the Yoda in this episode with the ABBs. Yep. We got Lawrence desperate in the Rider. So I feel like we should just go check this out.
Let's check out this episode. Princess, who's our sponsor this week?
This segment is sponsored by OneSkin. I'm going to be real with you. My skincare routine has historically been wash my face, put on whatever lotion is near me, and just pray for the best. And that worked fine, I guess, until I started noticing the fine lines just doing a little too much. The dullness, the whole I look tired even when I'm not tired situation. I kind of figured that was just a part of getting older. Turns out, I was only half right. So here's the thing that got me. As we age, certain skin cells basically stop doing their job. Scientists call them, and I love this, zombie cells. And those are what's actually driving the fine lines, the firmness loss, all of it. Most skincare just kind of decorates over that. OneSkin's OS1 was engineered by PhD longevity scientists specifically to go after those cells. Like, this is not a marketing language. Those products came out of actual research. 4 peer-reviewed studies, and I'm a detailed guy. That stuff matters to me. What I can tell you is my skin just looks better. I don't have a more scientific way to say it. It's not a dramatic overnight thing. It's more like one day you look in the mirror and go, oh, okay, something is working. And then you become that person who won't stop bringing it up. Over 10,000 five-star reviews, Bloomberg named them a leader in skin longevity. So apparently I'm not alone in this. The code is coming. Keep listening. Born from over a decade of longevity research, OneSkin's OS1 peptide is proven to target the visible signs of aging, helping you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code INSECURE at oneskin.co/insecure. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code INSECURE. And after you buy, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please tell them we sent you. It really does help the show.
You had a very specific process for all of us, like in the writer's room. Can you talk about how you approached us figuring out this entire season?
Yeah, I mean, I think what people don't know initially is you and I would meet. And the first time we actually were talking about, like, what do we want the season to actually be? And we met for brunch. And that became our tradition. And we would just sit around the pool and, like, drink champagne and just sort of talk about, like, what we were going through, what your friends were going through, what I was going through, what you were going through. And we would sort of take those ideas and stories and just make a bunch of note cards, right? Yeah. And then we would meet with the writers and then we would say, look, here's sort of what we're thinking in terms of certain concepts or things about characters. And we would have a big board in the writer's room and each character would have a color. So we'd have a color for Issa, Molly, Lawrence, and so on. And then we'd have a card for We Got Y'all, like what are storylines we could approach. And then we also had these cards that were about like conceptual ideas. Like we'd have like Earthquake or things that were just like, oh, big world ideas, but not necessarily knowing how they're going to be a story. And we would start to like kind of puzzle piece. Oh, we know and this should happen LA, here.
I think what that was also, there was an LA section within that.
Yes, too. And we had an LA section of like what's
stories.
Exactly. And I think, and we would start to put those on a board, almost like the way you'd put together a puzzle, like do the outside things you know first, like, oh, this is going to go there. And obviously a lot of that stuff would change, but that was really our, and then we sort of fill in the gaps of how that could be an interesting story. So I think a lot of times people don't know like how the sausage gets made, but that was sort of how we did it throughout the whole run.
Yeah, I love that process because we would have the writer's room would start with kind of a blue sky day. Obviously you and I would have our session, but then we'd allow everyone to have their input on, we should do this. And it was just no ideas, a bad idea. We're going to put it on a card. And then having the episodes laid out by number and just be like, maybe this could be episode 2, episode 4. Maybe this can go. And you kind of figure out a seasonal arc that way. And obviously things change, but you feel confident about and even get excited about the potential of the story.
Even, and again, it's like a lot of people are bringing their own personal stories to that thing, right? And I just think, and there was so, it was so great because even in the beginning, there would be things that we would be like, oh, we didn't work that into the season that would later, like the earthquake one was a big, we kept the earthquake shit around forever. And then it finally came in season five. Yeah. So that just, it was always a thing of like, you never know what's going to come out of these things. And so that was just like a fun way. And I remember we'd always have the board up and we'd sit there so proud, like little kids, like, look at our little board. Yeah.
It's so colorful. We know what we're doing.
So speaking of, obviously, in terms of bringing our real life stories to the room, what was going on in the real life of Issa Rae at this time?
I mean, this was my world, to be honest. And so many of this season, to your point, was like the lives of everyone else in the room. But I knew I wanted to introduce other characters. It's so funny when I did the pitch post pilot of like future episodes, I wanted Jared to come back. Like that was always in my version of an episode too. I don't think I shared that with you guys because I was like, we're throwing all this shit out. It's a different show. But I was really excited to be able to bring Jared back just because I always thought that he was going to be some sort of love interest for Molly. And I remember bringing that in the room. But then generally, I wanted to introduce real life people. Like Chad was based off of, you know, I don't know if he knows that yet, but, you know, my then boyfriend's friend. And whenever they used to talk about me, he would always refer to me as old girl. And I'd be like, why does he call me a girlfriend? Like,
old girl was the best. Old girl became like our BDB. Like, that's kind of what old girl was. Like, just him keep Chad never remembering her name. Like, who?
Old girl. It was just old girl. And that used to piss me off. So I was like, I'm writing it in this character. And so to be able to like create Chad and make him, you know, who he was.
Yeah. Like even this episode of the pops of the different guys was even stories that you'd be like, oh, my friend dated someone like this or somebody like that.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So much of this was also taken from my real friend's life about her dating experience on the apps and stories that she would tell. But I remember distinctly in the room, our single ladies were breaking down what the apps were, like talking about how, OkCupid is free, so you get the bottom of the barrel too. And like, those were verbatim things that were said in the writer's room from their experiences trying to date in LA. And so we tried to convey that through Molly's story, but it was a reflection of the single women in our room.
And it's funny because I think in the room at the time, I think only myself and Ben Dugan were married at the time. And so
Ben wasn't married yet, I don't think.
I think he might have been married, but no kids.
You're right, no kids.
And I had been in the dating world in a second. I remember hearing those stories and I'd be like, niggas are not this bad. And then I remember just a barrage of stories. And I was like, oh, the black race is not going to populate. These niggas out here are trash. Like, I remember Natasha had a story about a nigga who just went out and ordered a cup of ice cream on a date. And she was like, nigga, what are we, five? Like, this nigga just, all he ordered was a scoop of ice cream. I don't
get to do this often, so this is my treat.
She was like, yeah, he took me on a date and ordered a root beer and a cup of ice cream. And I was like,
this is
serial killer behavior. And I just remember being like, this is horrible.
Yo, where did trying to fuck come from? I remember that either that was my friend's life or we were talking about it in the room. Like trying to fuck.
I want to say that might have been Amy's stories of dating was somebody said trying to fuck. But I just remember that being a constant refrain of trying to fuck. Trying to fuck.
That was really satisfying to see. I forgot about that and I couldn't remember where that came from.
That's also one of my favorite lines in the nail salon where she's like, you got to fuck a lot of frogs to get a good frog.
That was Laura Kittrell, a Laura Kittrell line where she was like, no, that's not a saying. So I know that we talked about this the last time, your as a man approach to the male characters in this show.
Holding black men down.
I can't say
including hoteps.
That you wanted to bring depth to the male characters here. So for this particular episode, how did that play into how we wrote?
Yeah, I mean, normally, I mean, we would joke in the room a lot of me feeling like I was like defending niggas. And we'll get more to that as we do the podcast. This episode, what people don't know, I don't think, is that Lawrence wasn't going to be around.
No, he wasn't.
For any more episodes. That was going to be the end of Lawrence. And I remember us, for me, one, Jay is an amazing actor. And yeah. I was like, this guy's great. But also, I felt I hadn't seen that representation of a black man before, mm-hmm. right? Just the same way I hadn't seen a representation of a black woman like you before on television, right? And so for me, it was like, my as a man, I think, is actually less hot takey and more just being like, I want to see more of this. And I, even coming off Girlfriends, where I worked on that show, you know, you can only do so many storylines with William, right? Mm-hmm. As a guy, because there's so many other characters of service. And so this felt like there felt like a space that he could sort of operate, even if it was a small one, to sort of see representations in that kind of a character. So for me, it was one, just advocating to see more of that, right? And so that was really my biggest thing, was seeing, oh, how do we see a guy like this, sort of like, you know, sort of, you know, struggling emotionally, struggling in his relationship, but like not a bad guy, right? Yeah. And I think that's what was always nice about our show. It was never binary bad, good, right? And so even seeing guys like Chad, seeing guys like Thug Yoda, who's a blood, but is a good dad, right? And yeah. I think seeing all those various relationships to me felt fresh in a way that I was like, oh, I know these black men, but I don't see them, right? And so that to me became the biggest thing. It was like, oh, how do we continue to explore all these different kinds of black men, which we eventually do in series. But that was, to me, felt like the first time I was like, oh, as a man, I want to see more men that feel like me and my friends and people I knew.
Yeah. And I felt like it was especially relatable because this was a dude who was like trying to get himself back on his feet and trying to understand like where he went wrong, you know, in so many ways, and taking accountability, but still not quite getting it. And that was the frustration between him and Issa, or that was Issa's frustration with him. Like, she couldn't see that he was trying, and she couldn't see like the efforts that he was putting into trying to understand their relationship and when he went wrong. All she could see was the wrong.
Yeah.
Which ultimately led to, like, this was one of my favorite endings, where we got to have like kind of the graduate style ending where they crack this joke about the Yoda, and then they laugh, and then you kind of stay on them, and it's like, where do we go from here? Yeah. Like, we'll be okay. And that was kind of our way of foreshadowing that things weren't going to be all rosy between them.
As we talked about before, it's like there are parts of it that feel sitcom-y, right? Like the pops and certain things that feel that way. Even the trying to fuck feels very bold in a certain way that I don't think we would have done like later. But ending in that sort of like, because the normal way to end that in a sitcom would be like they cracked a joke and whatever. Mm-hmm. But sitting in the uncomfortability showed me like, oh, it was the first time I felt like, okay, we're going to do more things that can end in this sort of weird, awkward, really insecure place. Yeah. And that's when I was like, okay, this show will be cool in a different way.
Do you want your man or not? Do you know your plans or not? You going to go back home or not? You gonna claim your throne or not? Is you Khaleesi or that other bitch whose name I don't remember?
Lisa,
huh?
I'm hungry. Let's go.
Okay.
What I love about, so we obviously open up episode 2 with a rap saying who she is. It's post Broken Pussy. Mm-hmm. PPP, and as a post-broken pussy, as everybody knows it as. It's post-broken pussy. And the girls are going back out to brunch. She's obviously not gone home. She's avoiding that. So, you know, like, where is Issa right now?
Issa is being her typical avoidant self, avoiding conflict and confrontation. She feels like she has to make a decision that she's not ready to make. And, you know, who better to hang with and help her avoid shit than Molly? But I remember, you know, in the room talking about trying to craft this episode and putting them on a journey together and trying to understand, like, this is where we really get, I think, a lot of Issa's flaws, Issa's flaws, because I would never do this. but just in trying to understand how she approaches conflict is by, like, running away in so many ways and not being honest with herself and not facing them head on. So we go on a little adventure with them. And this was fun for us just to also showcase different spots in LA. Like you mentioned, we went to the Line Hotel. There was a nail salon that we wanted to feature. We were shooting downtown. We were kind of all over, I want to say.
In the beginning, very much just a hang.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, okay, I've avoided going home. We're going to go to brunch. Obviously, we're going to go to the nail salon. You know, Molly gets a vajacial.
Which someone brought up in the room, I want to say. Amy brought up getting a vajay. It was always Amy. Amy, I love you. Never change. But yeah, like, I wonder if she actually did really see it on Drea's Instagram.
I think she did. I think that was a real thing. That was like, shout out to Drea.
Yeah, shout out to Drea for giving us inspiration for this. And we wrote a scene to shoot. Like, where
we did.
Did we actually shoot it?
We did not shoot the
bubbles. Never shot the vajay show.
No. I remember that vajay show was going to be just, you just see Molly's head and just bubbles come up in between her legs. I'm glad we did not. Shoot.
We didn't waste money.
No, we didn't. We're like, we're gonna like this tomorrow.
Funnier to hear that bitch blue bubbles.
Girl, hey, look at you. How was your vajayshul?
This bitch blue bubbles in me. My pussy is still broken.
There were definitely those elements again that were inspired by real life writers' room moments, but this was kind of a character journey.
Yeah.
That we would do a lot of those. I love the episodes where we kind of just get to roam and explore the cities and learn more about the characters.
Speaking of saying stuff, you and Yvonne were obviously so fun together at the brunch, at the nail salon. You know, obviously some stuff people know, you know, we would play, but how much of that was improv? How much was that was scripted to you? And when did you guys just feel naturally comfortable to like how would you guys riff off each other in the process of that?
This was actually super scripted, I want to say, because again, this was the first scene that we shot of the entire series. So it was kind of like, let's hit our mark. It was like, you can kind of see the choreography to me of just like the 1-2. And then as we progressed and our rapport, because we were already friends and stuff and super excited, but that's when we got kind of loosened up to be able to have more fun and to be more easy. But watching that, Yvonne was fully herself in that scene. Like, I could see, obviously, Molly, but I could see traits of her, the woman who I, you know, the friend that she would become to me. But it was a struggle.
It's interesting because when you cut together, we know because we were there, but when you're seeing it, it's interesting to watch those scenes play out, you know, in season one versus multiple seasons of you guys playing around. Did you have a favorite line you guys did?
One of my favorite lines from that scene, I feel like you flew in, was like, is your pussy going to pass a smog test? And that was just like so evident of the kind of jokes that you would pitch, or, you know, that represented Issa and Molly's friendship and dynamic.
Can't pitch that now.
No, you can. Is your pussy going to pass a smog check? It's funny regardless at any time.
It was even like little things where Yvonne would be like, hair done, everything. And like just like click her mouth, like feel like
the black
she was
always
like playing with her ponytail. Yeah, she was like, because it felt like the first time that Yvonne had that long weave, and she's like, I'm gonna play with this shit all day. If you watch the episode, watch it. She playing with that ponytail all day. I'm a panty.
Oh, and then we also, this was the first time we introduced the Drake line with the fancy. I'm gonna have a fancy day. Hair done, nails done, everything did. Yep. My first thing was, you know, the music gonna be fired in the show. My second thing is, I remember sheepishly bringing this up in the room, like, hey y'all, I wanna have Easter eggs where I put a Drake lyric in every episode. And y'all were like, okay.
Okay, sure, sure.
Sure, bitch, whatever you want.
I'm gonna get her fixed. Houseway.
I'm making today Molly Maintenance Day.
I'm gonna get my hair done, nails done, everything then.
Ooh, like a fancy day.
Basically.
Yeah.
And that was like the first time we started sprinkling in Drake lyrics every episode with the fancy day. Some people, the most satisfying thing was people catching on to it in season one. I don't know that they, I feel like people maybe caught on at the end of season one, but definitely by season two, they understood.
Yeah, they knew what was coming. Yeah.
Song lyrics into it. And that was just because I genuinely was a huge Drake fan at the time and really wanted to showcase that. And I felt like there was a type of Black girl that loved Drake, and Issa D and Issa Me were those
Issa
girls.
We. Yeah. Fuck with it.
So in this episode, we also get Lawrence's perspective, and we get to meet one of his best friends. Yeah. The Molly to his Issa is Chad, played by Neil Brown Jr.
Hilarious. I mean, when we first saw Neil, he was reading for Lawrence.
Yeah.
And we took him to network, and obviously, like, we picked Jay, but we just were like, this guy's hilarious and great. And I think he had just come off of Straight Outta Compton. Like, that had just kind of dropped. He played DJ Yella. And I saw him, I was like, oh, that's the dude from Straight Outta Compton. And he came in as Chad. And I remember the Chad dialogue was so long. And it was a lot of, like, because he's saying, hey, Fast Mike, he fat as fuck, blah, blah, blah. You know, how's Whoopty Whoop or whatever. Like, all that, like, quick dialogue. And Neil speaks naturally fast anyway. So I just remember when he came in and he just would saying those long monologues of how he is. And he's barely letting Lawrence talk. And it was just like, he's like, I have an agenda and it doesn't include you opening up right now.
You. Hey, who was there?
Oh, Fast Mike and Brandon, where you at?
Man, Pasadena is far as fuck.
Nigga, it's only like four freeways.
Grab me and get this thing.
I got you.
Yo.
Bro, Fast Mike got fat as fuck. I want to call him Slow Mike, but you know how sensitive
nigga. Get. What's good with you, man?
Oh, shit is up right now, money.
I sold the house to Todd Gurley, man. I was starstruck, tap dancing for his ass and shit. That nigga swole as fuck. Commission was crazy.
Oh, that's cool.
What's up with you, man? How's that new project going?
Whoop-de-woop.
Whoop-woop.
What'd I say?
Still working on my business plan, man.
Plus, you know, there's so many apps out there now, it's hard to break into the
market. I'm going too broad.
Don't need to be more specific. It's just a lot, you know?
Cool, cool. That's what's up, man. Hey, I'm going to be selling you a house soon, fam. How you an old girl?
Issa's cool.
She, kind of fucked up her birthday, man.
Aw, damn, man. You got to fix that. But other than that, you good, right?
Actually, man, I was calling because I just...
Shit, this motherfucker hit a three, bro. Hey, man, let me finish the rest of this game. I'm gonna shout at you, all right?
Yeah, all right. All right, cool.
Neil was literally the perfect Chad. Like, he brought him to life. He made Chad even more fun to write. And there was never you never had to explain who Chad was to him.
No.
It's like he knew who he was immediately. So much so that I almost didn't like Neil because he played Chad too good. There were moments in season two where he was improvising lines.
Oh, great.
Riffing on Issa as Chad. And I was like, hey, bro, no. That's
this feels personal.
Write what's written. Because you coming from my hair now. So yeah, he's amazing.
Now, there was some inspiration, obviously.
Yes. There's a way that your man talks to you. And then when you see him around his friends or you hear him around his friends is a whole different, like, who's this person in front? Like, why are y'all talking like this? I know y'all don't. This is not your real personas. This is not who you are to me. So just being able to show, like, why Lawrence would be attracted to a friend like this, which I still can't quite understand.
You know what I love about that is, like, I have friends of mine. There's a collection of us who are all fraternity brothers, and there's a way we think collectively. And then there are things I would never go to certain people for because they're not going to be helpful at all.
Yeah.
And I think what I like about this episode is you sort of see where Chad might fit in his life, which is, like, if Lawrence is a little bit more reticent to do something, Chad's the kind of dude that's be like, double fisted in Vegas, like, let's go get these hoes, nigga. And, like, so you need it, like, let's go get these hoes type nigga in your life. You know what I mean? But that's not who you go to when your relationship falling apart, you know, because he going to be like, oh, man, fuck old girl.
Yeah,
like, you know
what I mean?
Fuck old girl.
Get the hoes.
Yeah, let's go get these hoes,
this
nigga.
This is an excuse.
Yeah, nigga.
Yeah, which was also fun to write because you are writing someone who is just completely opposed to you as a being. So it was kind of like just, you know, shooting at myself through Chad or any other times. How could I forget that this is also the introduction of Woot Woot? which
where'd that come from?
Was that in the room? We created our own company.
We did. I think we had a spreadsheet on the, we had two things on the whiteboard, which was what would we do if we won the lottery? And then how would we build out Whoop Whoop?
And I feel like I was definitely picturing what would ultimately be like Elon's desire to do X or whatever the X has. Because it was like, it would pick you up. It would plan your activities with your friends. It was just an all-in-one.
It was low-key, like almost like an AI like type thing.
Like, we're going to get your friends together. But Lawrence, the name Woot Woot was so stupid in the room. Gave it to Lawrence. And I feel like that was also a time when so many apps were coming out and so many founders were so proud to release these stupid sounding apps. And so, Lawrence, we get a sense of what he does.
Yeah.
And built on that.
Because we don't really ever say, I don't think in the pilot, it's just like working on a business plan of something. Plan.
I just need to finish my business plan.
I do remember sometimes in the room, you would be like, I have a pitch. And I'd be thinking it'd be out the episode. And it would be a pitch about Woot Woot. Like, oh, you know, we should do our Woot Woot. It was a real thing.
It was going to be a $1 billion app, guys. We should have gone through with it, but.
Meridian didn't think so.
They crushed his dreams.
So one of the reasons, obviously, why he's calling Chad is because Issa's avoiding him, right? And she eventually avoids him right into meeting him at the Rite Aid buying panties.
Rite Aid. Buying panties.
Issa.
Lawrence?
Where have you been, huh? I've been calling you.
Oh, I have my phone on airplane mode.
What the fuck?
I'm just buying.
You buying panties?
Why are you being all loud?
Why are you buying a six pack?
It's cheaper and it's not like it's the cute kind.
Wait, are you not coming home?
Lawrence, I'm not going to talk about
this right now. No. You can't keep ignoring me, Issa. I want to talk.
Lawrence, we are not about to be the black couple fighting in Rite Aid.
Okay, listen. I know that this is about your birthday, okay? But
it's not even about my birthday. See? You don't even...
I don't even what?
I can't do this right now. I'm sorry. I gotta go.
Issa!
So this pissed me off for so many reasons because we are lying to our audience. We're a show built on authenticity we tried to sell the 99-cent store for Rite Aid, which people caught Amia. They were like, Rite Aid? That's 99 cents. Why didn't we? One, I don't understand. It ended up being like a CVS or Rite Aid wouldn't let us film.
They wouldn't let us film there. Right? Yeah.
And so we had to find a last minute option. But why didn't we change the line to we are not about to be the black couple fighting in the 99-cent store, which would have worked? Was it because 99-cent store does not sell panties?
I don't remember. It could have been that. I think it also just sounded, maybe it sounded better too. I just remember that in the room. I remember talking about that in the room. I was like, my wife and I would get into a lot of arguments and she would be like, she would always say, we're not about to be the black couple fighting at blankety blank. Like, okay. I remember when we had our first kid, we had got into an argument at the Chart House and she was talking about like, I think I'm gonna just take Nathaniel, go live with my mom and we'll figure out, cause it was the writer's strike. And I was like, you ain't taking my kid. Clean the table, like all extra dramatic. And I walked out and these white people were going up to my wife like, are you okay? Do we need to get you somewhere? And she was like, no, I'm fine. And then she walked out. She was like, we are not about to be the black couple fighting at the Chart House. And so she would always use this like a blanket thing. And so it was just for like, we're about to be the black couple fighting there.
Shout out to Tasha.
Shout out to Tasha.
It's like, you ain't going to take my kids at a sweet. It's crazy.
Yeah, I was definitely sleep deprived having a new kid.
You a good dad.
So let me ask a question. So how did the writer's room land on panties? Do you remember any of that in the room?
One, I hate the word panties. I feel like now I've only just been able to start saying that.
What would you say? Draws? What would you say? Underwear?
Underwear. Okay. Thank you very much. Draws is
mentionables?
Very masculine.
Unmentionable? Is it mentionables or unmentionable?
Unmentionables.
Unmentionables.
You can't mention them.
I guess you're right. Yeah.
But no, I think we wanted to show. One, it's ridiculous. Why do you need to buy? But I also tried to show that she planned to be away for a long time. Yeah. It's just like, I need this extra. I might never go back. Who knows? I'm going to avoid this forever. I can avoid this for as long as I can. Molly lets me stay here, which is so irresponsible and indicative of just kind of her character.
In the pilot, obviously, Jay has really one scene, maybe two in the pilot. I can't remember. But he doesn't get to be funny, really, in the pilot. Mm. And obviously, the scene with Chad, it's a little bit more like he's trying to connect. He doesn't have a lot of the comedy in that moment. And I remember we filmed and I was like, well, you know, he's a more serious actor. But in this scene, I remember it was the first time I was like, oh, Jay's actually like funny and like this character will be funny to watch and we can write like, to me, I remember that this scene being like, oh, we should write to that energy for that for
him. Well, we did, and we cut it all. Remember, he was, there was there were pops of him calling Issa on the phone. He was like making wings.
That's right. That's right.
He was
trying
to like lure her back with some wings. And
he was like, it was like the five stages of, we were doing like the five stages of grief.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And we did it through like how he was calling her and like, cause he was blowing up her phone all day. Yep. So it started off like, I got you some win, whatever it was, but he killed it. And I think ultimately we just decided like pops weren't part of our show. Yeah. So we nixed it.
I want to tell you something about how this podcast all started, because it was not a confident thing. There was no moment where I sat down and said, yes, I have a clear vision and a plan and I know exactly what I'm doing. It was more like I had an idea. I had some doubts. I had some more doubts. And then I just started anyway. And I think that's how most creative businesses actually begin. Not with certainty, with the decision to move despite the uncertainty. What I wish I had more of in those early days, especially when it came to the business side of building something, was Shopify. Because the creative part I could figure out. It's all the other stuff. The store, the sales, the shippings, the wait, how do I even set this up stuff? That's where you need a real partner, not just another app to learn. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. We're talking millions of businesses, from the names you already know down to the person who just decided their side hustle is actually a real thing now. You get hundreds of templates so your store looks like you, not like a generic website someone else abandoned. AI tools that write your product descriptions and make your photos look professional without you hiring a photographer. Built-in email and social campaigns and 24/7 support. Which, look, if you've ever been stuck at midnight trying to figure out why something isn't working and had nobody to call, you know exactly why that matters. It's time to turn those what-ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/insecurepod. Go to shopify.com/insecurepod. That's shopify.com/insecurepod.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
So after we see you obviously avoiding Lawrence for more times, obviously in the writer, you go back to Molly's and ask, can you spend another night, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't have any clothes with you, obviously, because you're not going home. So, and you borrow one of her suits. And it is the first time we sort of see Issa being more professional. Yeah. Can you talk to sort of like what it was like? Like, was Issa the character more confident coming into that scene?
I think, how could you not be confident in a Molly suit walking in? You kind of felt the energy of like, I'm here about my business. And we get to see her coworkers' reactions too as she walks in, like, who is this bitch? This is not the Issa that shows up every day to work. What I do love about like this episode, we get to see more of the We Got Y'all staff, and we flip, you know, in the pilot, we meet her coworkers, we meet her boss, and they're kind of like dismissed as these kooky white people.
Yeah.
But in this episode, we flip it and show that like Issa is also culpable in a way of not showing up at her job in the way that she should and kind of winging it. And while the her white coworkers are still very, very annoying, you can see how she plays her own part in kind of giving up in this work environment and just taking the money in this nonprofit world. Yeah. But these are some of my favorite characters.
Did you have a favorite?
I love everyone. You know, Mason, Veronica, Kat, like obviously Kitty. Sujata came from Sujata. Awkward Black Girl with me. And it was so exciting. People were so disappointed that, you know, obviously an Awkward Black Girl, Jay's character and Cece, who's played by Sujata, are best
friends.
And in this world, they're antagonists. And, you know, the brown girl has joined the whites in that side. But that was always fun to watch their scenes. And they did a lot of improv.
Mason was just, I remember you could almost give Mason, Veronica, you could give them anything. Yeah. And they would. And Kathleen, who played Patricia, was just, you would just throw like, you know, we take them to lemonade.
She just had a run of just improvised frustration. Of just like, we love the idea of Patricia being this lazy character. Yeah. And Veronica as Kitty was always just gratingly annoying. And she had this affect that she would put in her voice that we would imitate in the room of just like, as we wrote her, like, can we just get tapas? Like whatever it is, they just embodied these annoying archetypes so brilliantly. So.
And when she would draw it out, which I always thought was great. She was like, so do you mean like all the arts? It was just like that kind of white person that's just like, picking you apart.
Yes, in front of everyone. In front of
people, yeah.
And it's earned. But yeah, shout out to the We Got Y'all cast because they really made that world come to life.
And to Joanne, which I thought we did a really good job, I think, of because it would have been very easy and like to say like, oh, Issa's going to like just throw whatever to these white people. But Joanne actually calls her out and is like, nah, when you first got here, like you was on it and now you kind of lazy. And like she calls you to the carpet on that. And she's like, she's not afraid.
It's so funny. We used to always joke about like, because shout out to the actress who plays Joanne Catherine. She really embodied that role. And we used to always talk about like,
how did she get here?
Well, how did she get here? And like, what is her version of, like, if we're following her, does she think like she's Lean on Me? Like, what is the Joanne version?
Her office looked crazy though. If you think about like what was in her office, and it was just like, it was crazy.
She's saving these kids. That's her mission.
Speaking of the logo.
Oh my God, the logo. Shout out to Ayanna, who was our costume designer. Yeah. She was so excited to create the logo for We Got Y'all, which, you know, for those who look closely, you don't have to look that hard, is a white hand saving some black children. And so that was the We Got Y'all uniform, which is so offensive. But that also tells you a lot about Joanne, who's founded this organization of white saviors.
Yeah. And we also talked about like the era in which she would have started this, right? Versus the era that they were currently in the show, right? So it's like someone who's like of a time where you're like, oh, I'm not even thinking about those elements, which are like little details that we would always talk about in the way that the world really worked, where it's like, oh, she's not like a bad white person. She's well-meaning, just like is a little bit out of her depth in a certain way, at least today. And this is when Frida says Blazer Twins, right?
Blazer Twins, which I feel like actually happened. Did that happen to somebody in the writer's room?
Well, we would often find days in which we would be dressed alike as writers. Oh, just that's right. Sort of that random. And we had an Instagram page of writer fits and where we would all be like, oh, it's a random day and everybody's wearing like jeans or something.
Yeah, but that was also, we talked about, this is the beginning of kind of Issa and Frida's relationship softening. And establishing that all Frida wants to do is just be Issa's friend.
Be her best friend.
Which is a different color. And Lisa Joyce just brought such an earnestness to Frida. You wanted her to be friends.
Yeah, yeah.
The Blazer Twins.
Look at that.
Hey, I'm so glad you came in early.
So speaking of, obviously, Sujata, who you work with on Awkward Black Girl, we also meet someone who's also in Awkward Black Girl this episode, which is Thug Yoda.
Come on, Tristan Winger, my guy, who played baby voice Darius. One of the most satisfying things that I heard, and as a testament to Tristan's talent, is like people didn't recognize that Thug Yoda was baby voice Darius. They're two completely different roles that showcase Tristan's amazing range.
Talk to me, blood. Me and Nala was just about to go watch the Bear Bears.
Care Bears, Daddy.
We don't use no C words, sweetheart. It's a blood house. Are you sure you're bull, man?
I just been messing up. Started this business that didn't pan out. Now I'm watching all my friends just pass me by. It's just been frustrating on all levels.
A nigga stuck. Yeah, you ain't working, you ain't providing shit. You probably ain't even putting it down.
Man, hey.
Nah, no disrespect. You love your girl and shit, right?
Yeah, I do. I just don't know how to change things, man.
Now, hear me out. I used to be out there fucking bitches, being inconsiderate and shit. But then when I had Nala, I was like, what if she meet a nigga like me?
I remember this is one of those stories that ended up on the page, but I was telling y'all how I went to a post office. I had to always go to the ghetto post office because I felt like I was fulfilling maybe Awkward Black Girl t-shirts. I don't know, but it was a post office and I was standing behind. We had to stand outside in line before we could go in. And I was standing behind this dude who had a wife beater on and was holding his daughter and was cussing someone out on the phone.
I think I do remember that now.
And he was like, yeah, well, don't fuck with me. And I was like, this is so beautiful.
He is
clearly this, you know, thug dude going off on somebody, but also like making sure that his little girl is okay. The dichotomy of that was just like, this is my neighborhood. I love it. Yeah. And I told you guys that story and I feel like that went into the origin of Thug Yoda, in addition to obviously blood culture, or a gang culture in LA, and like going to high school with these dudes who bang.
But I think too, that's also something that, even reflecting on like older hood movies like Boys in the Hood or Menace, you'd often see like the gangbanger, but not sort of like get into that life and be like, oh, but like gangbangers can be good dads and be present. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so what I liked about seeing all these different representations of Black men and Black men in our neighborhood, right? And so just because somebody does this, it doesn't mean they're not that either. Yeah. And I often think too, like, a lot of times in male relationships, I feel like sometimes you'll find the best advice in the most unlikely places. Mm-hmm. Lawrence has no, like, he's not thinking, even when I'm talking to Thug Yoda, I'm coming to you for advice. This is just a thing that is happening. And we just happen to meet at this moment. And what I like about that is like Lawrence doesn't have, he's not trying to cover. Because even when he calls Chad, he's actually like low-key like talking about some bullshit before he gets to the point.
Yeah.
And with Thug Yoda, he's just sort of being himself. He's not like trying to cover or pretend or whatever. And so I just remember being like, oh, this is like a really good moment about just male dynamics and male friendships that are just like, yeah, this is how these things sort of organically kind of happen.
Yeah. How did we come up with the name Thug Yoda? Was it post this scene that you guys?
It was post this scene. We didn't call him Thug Yoda in the thing.
I feel like y'all wrote Thug Yoda on a card and then named him that.
I think maybe we did it because it was supposed to be like he's giving wise advice.
Yeah, probably.
And it was like Thug. I also love that this was also, I don't even think we crafted this way, but it was also the introduction that Thug Yoda thinks you're a lesbian. Because he's like, oh, she leave you for another bitch.
I definitely
not like
that.
Another guy. It's like, yes. Oh, she leave you for another bitch. And he just keeps thinking you're gay. The whole series.
Which doesn't make sense at all in the context of him knowing Lawrence Brooks. You know what?
No.
We also set Molly on this dating adventure that was based off of a conversation we had in the room about kind of the hierarchy of dating apps.
Yeah.
We got to cast, you know, Black men, because Molly was looking for her Black king, Black men to represent each of those apps. And those were fun cameos. But can you talk about kind of what went into casting them and the different archetypes of men that we wanted to portray?
Yeah, I remember being like, it's because I think it starts with Bootleg and Chill. Right. And he's like sucking a giant like chicken bone or whatever. And then it was like the guy in the black and white shirt that's like super.
I can't remember what app that was.
Yeah, it was like, I think he would have been, it was something, I don't know if he was Raya, like what's the one that connects you to
that
friends, you know? And I love that the button is she still fucked the hotel.
Yeah, she still fucked the hotel because he was fine.
I just want a queen that respects herself, who lays off the swine, who stands beside her king like a strong black woman should.
Yeah.
Man. But my queen gotta be a freak too.
It's also funny seeing those types of things now in real life, like watching weird podcasts and certain things about relationships.
Oh,
now it's like, oh my God, it's so heavy in that sort of alpha male body count, like all that stuff.
We were ahead of our
time. Yeah.
He would have, that dude that sold puzzles at the African marketplace would definitely.
The puzzles
at the
African marketplace.
Without a doubt.
Is that what we introduced the beach? He teased me because he had been to the beach.
Yeah. He had been to the beach till college, and that was kind of our, that's right.
I'm from Florence and Crenshaw.
So by the end of the episode, after all of this, Issa finally decides to go home.
Wait, now before she goes home, there's a scene that, again, as we talk about like mirroring the pilot in certain ways, there's a scene where she's practicing the argument.
That's right.
In the mirror, which was like, and I remember that scene because it's the first time you're also seeing the mirror used, like in the beginning of this episode, it's used in the way that we meet her in the pilot, which is like rapping and on an energy. And this was the first time that she's being Lawrence, which is, I feel like what you do in relationships sometimes is like you rehearse how the argument gonna go, like you practice it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it was all the fun things of seeing you as Lawrence and you as Issa, how the argument goes, like steal your Steve Harvey Barks box set.
Yep.
Hey man, fuck your mama. Just like all that.
I got a plan. Start the business.
Start the business.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
Favorite lines on earth.
So I'm home. You still the same nigga?
Yup.
But who else you gonna be with?
Oh, I got options, nigga. I got options.
So you ready to talk now?
You ready to man up now?
Ha!
Wasn't expecting that, ha?
That's good. What's my mama gonna say about us breaking up?
I don't give a shit about your mama, nigga.
She's really nice. Where'd you put all my shit?
In a box? To the left. It's like a jungle sometimes, nigga.
So you know I'm gonna take all my DVDs. Don't nobody want your Steve Harvey box set. You know I'm still working on my business plan.
I got a plan. Start the business.
That was a fun day to shoot because that was also day of just like throwing out jokes about Lawrence. Would Lawrence really have a Steve Harvey box set? I don't know.
I don't know. Nobody wants your Steve Harvey box set, nigga.
It was also so specific to the time. But yeah, that was like, that was showing us showing the other functions that the mirror could have narratively. You know, obviously we had the lipstick scene in the first episode and then this was, you know, her practicing, rehearsing this argument that ultimately wouldn't happen.
Yeah. It's just so fun because it is that thing where you almost want to prepare for every contingency. Like if they say this, I'm going to say that. If they say this, I'm going to say this.
That is my real life. And it never, of course, goes how you.
No, it never goes that way.
It's always that one thing that you, oh, I didn't practice this comeback. They got me there. Yeah.
And also when you come home, there's none of that smoke.
Yeah, none of that smoke, like whatsoever. I prepare for nothing. Oh, I don't want to age for nothing. Oh, you cool? Okay. I don't have to do all that? Cool. So at the end of that argument, she decides that she loves Lawrence, he loves her, and she needs to go home and confront him.
Got an interview with a headhunter tomorrow.
That's great. I shouldn't have ignored you today.
Thought you would have spelled an entire sentence today.
For real? That's brazy.
That was one of our most abrupt endings. Yeah. And it was one of my favorite endings, like I said, because we did this kind of graduate style ending where they crack a joke, but just because you crack a joke doesn't mean everything's all good. Of course we'll find out in the next episode.
I've been in many moments of that.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, we're teetering. And so that was fun. And then, of course, the incredible song starts. But Lawrence, I know for me, was not like he wasn't a part of my thought process for the series. And we didn't imagine him coming back. Yeah. We didn't. I don't know that Issa would ultimately have to go home. But there was maybe a time when we talked about them potentially breaking up and moving on. And we got to see that play out throughout the season. Can we talk about our like process or remind me of the process of how we incorporated Lawrence's storylines?
Yeah. The one thing I remember about that was, we were like, okay, it's going to take around 3 episodes to like kind of, it was almost like a little arc, right? It's like the beginning of the pilot. Yeah. This is the second act of that. And the third is obviously we get into with the episode of Beach Day as he's trying or whatever.
Just
so
because I'm back doesn't mean it.
Yeah, just because I'm back because things are all good or whatever. And we sort of see that sort of hit its head by the end. But I remember us in the room being very specific that we needed to earn his place in the show.
For sure.
And if we couldn't, I even remember like we weren't even thinking necessarily like if we couldn't, I think there was a time where we felt if we couldn't solve that, then like maybe it is a goodbye. And I remember that we were like, we can't obviously have the whole series, the season be occupied with this drama, but he needed to earn a place in the show as a character. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what I think we're seeing in the sort of the arc of the first 3 episodes, you're sort of seeing his place in the show.
Little did we know that in doing so, we would be building this Lawrence Hive.
A whole hive.
Oh my God. I had no idea what was to come.
No, we definitely had no idea. But what I liked about that was it showed me, because obviously like the pilot ends where, you know, you and Molly are sort of obviously back together, which we've always said is the sort of love story in the show, right? It was the first time I remember feeling like the show is pliable and is finding its footing, and shows can end in like uncomfortable ways. And I remember even in the room, I think we talked about this. I remember being like, one of my favorite shows to do this was Roseanne. Where they would just end on like a fight between, you know, John Goodman and Roseanne Barr. And an episode would just end in like a quiet or a loud or a weird, uncomfortable way.
That has to have been a later. Oh, Roseanne. Okay. I'm thinking of Married with Children, but Roseanne.
No, yeah. I just remember like episodes would end where it's like they just don't have no money. And it's just like they got to deal with the like life problem of that. I just remember that was always in my head that I had never seen even a sitcom at that point in like that. And I remember watching this being like, oh, this is great. This show can sort of find its own. Cause again, shows weren't doing that. Right. Or at least not that I remember. And so just to have the episode in where like the characters aren't all back together and feeling warm and fuzzy felt like, yeah, that's real life. All this talking about Issa and Maui's friendship and all the drama and the stuff with Lawrence and Chad definitely has me parched for sure.
Well, it's a good thing that we have Gatorade Lower Sugar nearby. That's why I brought him. I don't think.
Because
I've been a little parched too. And you know what hydrates better than water?
That's what's up.
Yeah, and it has No artificial flavors, sweeteners, or color, and has 75% less sugar than regular Gatorade, but all the electrolytes as Gatorade.
That's brazy.
So get your Gatorade lower sugar today.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on Spin Quest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What do you think we got right this episode?
I think we got right the ending. I think the ending would really, to me, showed that this is going to be a different kind of show than I think what people will expect. So I really like that there's parts that play with tone. And I think we also got right a lot about the relationships. Like the Rite Aid scene to me is like, oh, this is who this couple is. And this is how that really feels. It felt the most like a real relationship.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, what do you feel we got wrong?
You know, I touched on some of it, but it really felt like we were fine. And maybe the audience didn't see that, but I know how the sausage was made. And we wrote a lot of scenes that didn't end up making it. Like, this episode was almost too short with how much we cut out initially. And so that was kind of the makings of, okay, we're figuring out who these characters are, the story that we want to tell, how we want to tell it. And so because of that, it felt like, I would say, one of the most quiet episodes of the season. Even the music, I was like, oh, the music's not quite... Like, they're the ending songs, and then we have, like, a D'Angelo song, which is amazing, which we'll get into later. But, like, I was like, the music doesn't even feel like what the music was for the show until maybe the second half of the episode. So,
yeah. I think the pops, too. While funny, I think it, when I think about our show, it feels the most unlike our show, for sure.
Yeah. One thing that has not changed over the years is y'all love to be messy in the comments. So, we've incorporated that into this show with a fan question segment presented by Gatorade Lower Sugar, where we are going to read one or two questions from our viewers.
Yep. So a user on Reddit asked, is this how they talk in LA? So I'm rewatching for the 511th time, which I love the word 11th. I don't think I've ever seen it in print, but I love it. Yeah, 511th time. 511th time.
That's good.
And I noticed that most of the characters in their sentence with an upspeak as if everything is a question.
What?
Is this how people from LA talk, or is this just Issa and her team's decision? As much as I love the show, I find that small detail to be a tad distracting, but I'm curious where it came from.
They're saying that the characters speak like this and that we speak like that, kind of.
I think so.
Fuck, you watched it 50 million times and you thought that? That's not true. Did you really think that? Is that true? Is it actually true? Because then I would be talking like this the whole time. I don't know. Maybe you're commenting on the... our pictures, but I can't think about that. I feel like I speak in declarative
like that, right?
I feel like I speak very confidently and declaratively, but you know, maybe they know something that we don't. But thank you for watching it a whole bunch of times.
11 times. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, a user on Reddit asked, is this show a serious reflection of your 20s? I love the show. It's hella relatable, first off. My question is, I see a lot of older people saying the show reminds me of what their 20s were like. So my 20s can turn into this shitstorm. Yeah. Newsflash. Your 20s are fucked. But it's okay that it's fucked, I would say. Honestly, like, this is the only period where you'll be forgiven because your 20s. You can't be in your 30s fucking around like this. Nobody thinks it's cute. In your 20s, this is like the last free... As long as you don't commit a crime... As long as you don't do anything like permanently damaging, then you can do whatever you want in your 20s, go through it all so that you're more confident by your 30s.
Yeah, that's what I think is, I mean, the show starts with Issa's 29th birthday.
Yeah, so she's kind of going into the last right at the edge. She's teetering. And then, the rest of it isn't in her early, very, very early 30s.
Yeah.
And that is kind of that transition when you're finding yourself. One of the, I feel like one of the adages that was told to me was like, your 20s, you're still figuring out who you are. Mm-hmm. Your 30s, you're kind of more confident in who you are. And by your 40s, you don't give a fuck. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to get to my 40s to just not give a fuck. Because so much of your 30s are still, especially in that early part, in a sense, searching for that validation and searching for that, like, I'm an adult now and I want my surroundings to reflect my adultness. But am I ready for this shit yet?
I'm also some fuck shit.
Yeah. Also some fuck shit. So... Yeah, you in your 20s, you got a long way to go.
Yeah. And I do think the character is always, every season, we would always say is finding a stance. Like, this is my no fucks year. This is my so she is actually searching for the ability to stand on things.
That is so true. We always talked about that. Like, there is every season there was her declaring what her life was going to be and try to manifest it. But I see that so much. And it just became eras. I'm in my no fucks era. I'm in my bag era. Like, whatever it is that I think Insecure has reflected that, or Issa D's journey reflects that.
And you do get to a point where you're just like, man, I don't give a fuck.
I don't give a fuck. Whatever. Yeah. It's going to be what it's going to be.
It's going to be what it's going to be.
To find exclusive Block Party content
and to submit questions to be read live on the show,
follow Hooray's Instagram page. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube and at Hooray Media on all platforms for exclusive content. And we'll see y'all next week.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.